Welcome to Hot Lava Podcast. I am a mile high. Don't worry, Jay.
Wait, Denver. What?
I'm in Denver. Kevin A.C., Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. My boss, who needs to know that I am good to go, Jay Posner. Jay, Padres not, swept by the Giants.
Not partaking in anything up there, are you, Kevin?
That's just a mile high. Hey, it's legal everywhere. I don't have to wait till I come to Denver.
Well, I was going to say, between San Francisco and Denver, I'm sure there's no shortage of availability. If you were so inclined, so
which I'm not, just for the record, Jay.
Right.
Come on now.
Okay.
Hey, it is a grind, though. That's what Eric Hosmer said last night. He likes to use that word. They all do. It's a grind, and the Padres got into Denver early in the morning, and they are here for four against the Rockies. Not good. Swept by the last place Giants, and the Rockies, if I remember what I wrote last night, have won 11 of 16.
I'm not sure if that was it, but they're 35-32 and they won eight in a row and they're 4-5 since then. So I'm not sure how. I guess that would be 12 out of 17, maybe. Yeah, 12 out of 17, I guess.
That's what it was.
3-3 against the Cubs. They did get blown out yesterday. I did find this interesting that they're 20-13 at home, and yet their run differential at home is zero. So they've had some obviously more blowout losses at home than blowout wins, but 6.25 runs per game for each team on average so far at Coors Field this year. So the games could be long when you're up there. They could also be interesting. And for Padre fans, they would hope that they have better results than we saw the last couple nights in San Francisco. So why don't we go over those games? Because the first game was Chris Paddock, and there's obviously was news about him yesterday. So I guess the important thing was Paddock looked a lot better. He had one bad inning, but he looked a lot better after that game. What was the feeling about his performance on Tuesday night?
I think that was it. He got in this. You know, he got out of a jam in one inning. He had a bad inning. He gave a terrible pitch to Tyler Austin, I think it was.
It was one of those hanging changeups, which he's done a few times recently.
Which he'll go down and work on, but let's not get ahead to the go down.
Uh-huh.
The good part was, the velocity was back up. The good part was he was throwing the curve in more varied counts, and it was a good curve. It was actually a harder curve, and so it's like that was good for him. The Padres felt like, hey, this is a good pitch, man. But like what I'm learning here covering all these young guys, there's this difference between, yeah, I have confidence in it, and hey, I'm going to throw that.
Uh-huh,
and so that's been one of the most impressive things about Matt Strom. And with Chris Paddock, young guy, learning. So it was a very, very impressive outing in that way. Now, he only went five innings. He did get into trouble. He did give up those pitches and a home run afterward. So, but still, a lot of positives. And obviously, the Padres had planned. We knew this was going to happen at some point. The Padres obviously had it planned for yesterday that Chris Paddock would be optioned to single A. It appears it's going to be 10 days. And it, you know, the guy might not even pitch for the Lake Elsinore Storm. He'll do a couple bullpen sessions. If he pitches, it'll be like Nick Margavich just did with the Sod Poodles, where he pitched two innings, and the other was like these two bullpen sessions that are like, you know, super intense and like, let's work on this, man.
Yeah, it was funny to see the sort of mini panic yesterday that Paddock had been sent down. It was like, wait, this is something that's going to happen. And then I'm curious how they use him even when he comes back up, because with the All-Star break coming, there's ways to sort of manipulate the rotation where he can pitch, kind of get an extra start, or they could skip an extra start with him. And then even coming out of the break, you know, could always wait till the end of the rotation for him. And we'll get to Strom in a minute, but it was the same thing with Strom, who was going to have an innings limit as well. Now, he had a minor injury. You know, we don't know if he maybe could have pitched through it anyway, but same type of thing where they were looking to give him a rest. And so I think that's all that's going on with Paddock. I mean, he certainly, look, he hasn't pitched as well as he did in his first seven starts, but by no means has he pitched to the point where they're going to demote him based on his performance. So
I did see quite a few things in my timeline from Mets fans who were reveling and talking about what a joke Paddock was. He was being sent down. A clear misunderstanding, though. I guess give them their moment that their guy Pete Alonso is still going, and Chris Paddock hasn't been quite the same since that day. But that's sort of the definition of ignorance right there.
That was Kevin Acey who said that, just for anyone.
Sometimes you got to call it like it
just,
is.
Just for anyone wondering. So
that was planned.
Okay, right, Right. And then last night's game was, I don't even know what to say about last night's game. I mean, it was one of those weird things where the Padres were unlucky at the very beginning. Josh Naylor's ball, I still don't know if that was should have been ruled a home run or not. But then, you know, they still had chances. He was still on second base.
Yeah.
And then they had the bases, you know, Machado and Hosmer walk. They end up with the bases loaded with one out. And Reyes, as he's done, you know, at times this year with men on base, gets jumpy or froggy, as a certain TV analyst might say, and he jumped at the first pitch and hits into a double play. So there's a run, at least one run.
I got to say this. Should he have swung? No. But it was a really good pitch that Franmil Reyes could have hit into the bag.
Absolutely. But he, you know, just based on what he's done in those situations this year, he still, and I'm sure that it's been pounded into him, relax. But he, you know, he saw a good pitch, but he didn't do anything with it. The defense was sloppy. Tatis tried to do too much on the one grounder. They got a little unlucky in that inning with a couple ground balls that were, you know, infield singles, and then you have the play with the couple errors, and Naylor makes a bad throw, and it was just kind of a sloppy situation. And then at the end of the game, you know, just when everything looks like it's okay, the game's over, and you're about to hit send on your story, you know, Renfro, who looked awful the night before, striking out the first three times up, you know, smokes a double, they get the walk, and I thought that was a pitch around on Myers, where I felt like Will Smith was like, I don't really want to give Myers anything good here. I don't care he's hitting 220. I think I can get Manuel Margot out. And that was what ended up.
Lo and behold.
Lo and behold, that's what happened. So that, I guess you could file that under games that got away. There's been a few of those this year. And to me, that wouldn't you say that belongs in that category?
Absolutely. And if it happened in the middle of, you know, a four-game or at the end of a four-game winning streak, that would be one thing. And it's really the same thing as, you know, it happening to drop them to their worst record of the season. But that seemed sort of poetic and convenient for me, by the way.
Right.
To be able to say, hey, look how bad this was. So there they are.
And it's interesting.
Only spent,
go ahead. I was just going to say, it's interesting with the 33-35 record. So the worst, they had only been under 500, right? The one day and then the 2 days this week. And I, you know, there's two ways to look at that. One is that obviously they were 11-5. They've been over 500 most of the year. That's a good sign. The other thing is, if this is the worst they've been this year at two games under 500, you know, I guess it's not so bad. I mean, this is still a team, and obviously people got expectations raised a little bit early in the year, but I've said over and over, and I know you have and other people as well, this is still a team where if they finished at 500 this year, I would consider that to be progress. And even if they won eight, I mean, it's not a cold, solid 81-81. You know, somewhere in that range, 79-83 wins seem to be sort of a, to me, a best-case scenario. So if you're 33-35 now, it's not like that means that the sky is falling or anything. They're not playing particularly well. They've got issues with pitching. They've still got issues with guys that they need to be productive at the plate that aren't terribly productive. You know, last night the defense wasn't good, but we're going to see nights like that when you're going to be playing guys like Naylor and Reyes in the outfield. You're going to see nights where there might be mistakes made out there. You would hope that guys like Tatis and Hosmer wouldn't get involved as well. But anyway, that's my read on 33-35. You can take it any way you want. I got a couple tweets last night from people saying, you know, this is terrible, it's, you know, the normal stuff. And then I got a guy who said, you know, even at 33-35, I think they're overachieving, and to me they're still fun to watch. And if you look at their run differential, they probably are overachieving a little bit. I mean, they probably should have a couple fewer wins than they do. I think they're at minus 34 right now. So where are you on 33-35, Kevin?
I think so many things are coming true that those of us that observe the team and then obviously those in the organization have said. And you know, there's good and there's bad. And, hey, last night, for instance, and it wasn't the first time, Fernando Tatis, this is exactly what they were talking about. Fernando Tatis is going to cost you games. He is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's going to happen because he's also going to save you games and win you games, which has happened far more than what happened last night.
Right.
And that is a part of the growing process. So there you have it. It is an interesting transition that we're in right now. Not only have we been really focused on maybe not so much the record, but kind of the results. I don't know if that makes sense. Like, we've been kind of like, you know, more win-oriented here, and looking at moves that have been made and performances of players, and having that, you know, toward the record is what we've been focused on. And now we're like, okay, this is about what we thought. Plus, we got the trade deadline coming. Basically, everyone on this team, except the guys you could name, is available. And, you know, we got pitchers they're going to call up, particularly in the bullpen. So it's just this it is this interesting time of what is going to happen. And I don't know that any of us at this point could, like, this team wouldn't be on the board in terms of a win total right now, because we just don't know what who's going to be playing on this team. Who's
right,
going to be playing
right.
in the outfield? What if, you know, Manny Machado starts hitting like Manny Machado? What if that doesn't happen until next year? What if it never
right.
happens, Jay?
Well,
that's a whole podcast in itself.
I know it is. Well, and I mean, what if Kirby Yates gets traded?
Exactly.
I mean, you know, there's that kind of stuff that we'll have to get into more as we get closer to the deadline. But, I mean, that's going to be another part of this, is how many guys get dealt, and is that something where in the short run they decide that it's worth a few losses or perhaps worth a few losses to, you know, to get something for the future and to keep building the roster and at its weakest points, I guess.
And they have some things. When we're talking about trades here, I mean, we're talking about stocking the farm system exclusively. I mean, the Padres have some issues. They're I'm not saying they're ready to give up on their catchers, but, you know, they've been looking for more since they were looking to get JT Realmuto last year. They continue to be looking for a major league caliber catcher who can at least be, you know, what they wish they could. Austin Hedges and Francisco Mejia could have a baby.
Yes.
And that player could be the meld of the two of them.
Although I'd still love to see Mejia get a shot to, you know, play 5 days a week for a month, or at least a month or two, before we start wondering if they need to replace him. I mean, you know, look, Hedges shows signs at times of being somebody who maybe could be the guy that's going to hit if he could just hit 220 or 230 or whatever. And then there's times, you know, unfortunately more often than not, where he doesn't look like that guy.
And
I would like, but again, I'd like to see Mejia in that sort of situation. So maybe we'll see him sooner rather than later. Jeff Sanders, our colleague, is in El Paso right now. We talked to Luis Urias last night, who, you know, admitted there were things that he was supposed to be working on down there, and that he is working on that. So I hope everyone has checked out that story either online or in today's paper. And Jeff will have more out of El Paso over the weekend and into next week as well. I know he's hoping to talk to Andres Munoz at one point. So we'll see when he might be up. But first, Kevin, four games at Coors Field, and the first two will be thrown by Matt Strom in his return from the injured list tonight, and Cal Quantrill tomorrow night. And what they both have in common is neither one has pitched at Coors Field before. Good luck to that. I'm sure they know what they're in for, but what do we think we're seeing out of Strom tonight? And are we looking at sort of his normal, you know, 90-95 pitch limit, or maybe even a few fewer because of the absence for the past couple weeks?
I would think a few fewer because of the absence, but not many. I mean, this is, again, something that they expected. And heck, we could see it again with Strom if they can, like you mentioned, around the All-Star break and that sort of thing. So, and Matt Strom is a different kind of cat. He probably would have pitched through this. I mean, I'm no doctor. I don't know exactly the levels of truth that I get told, but it sure did seem, based on everything, seeing him, hearing from him, other people, that this was, you know, that he's going to be back out there 100%, and he has been for a couple days. So, we'll see. Like, what did the rib injury bother him more? I don't think there's any doubt that it bothered him a little bit on certain pitches, and his, you know, the results seem to indicate it. So, you have that. Cal Quantrill, love what he's done. I like the story too, because none of us have been. I mean, no one has been all that impressed with him, including in the organization. And Austin Hedges, oh wait, he's pretty good at that kind of stuff. He has really helped Cal Quantrill out in terms of the confidence. I mean, when you hear these guys talk about Austin Hedges, it's just real. To borrow an Andy Green phrase, everything's real. Have you noticed that, Jay?
Yes.
It's real.
Yes.
It's a real fastball. He's a real player. No, it's legit what Austin brings, and he's helped out Cal Quantrill a lot, including the confidence. Hey, we're throwing that slider. We'll see how it plays in Coors Field. And then on Saturday comes Eric Lauer, who he called it a beep show his last time here. Just
It was. Three innings, eight hits, eight runs. There's not really any other word for it other than that.
And no excuse, no, nothing like, well, this worked or that worked. Uh-huh. You know, because pitchers have to look at it that way, right?
Right.
They're like, well, I did this, I did, and they have to. Not that day, not Eric. Like that. Nope, had nothing. So he's been really, you know, pretty darn good. Maybe the best version of Eric Lauer, really, if you consider, you know, the pitch mix, the length he's going into games, the opponents that he's faced. He's actually been pretty darn good since then. But here he's back at Coors Field, where actually he's had a couple beep shows in his short career. So we'll see that, and then we'll have the Margavishes show, which just means him and a cast of relievers, probably.
Yeah, I mean, he went five when the Padres were up there in May. The two games they lost were Friday and Sunday games, 12-2 and 10-7. And the 10-7 game, I think Reyes hit a home run late to make it score a little more respectable.
Yeah.
But Margavichus gave up five runs in five innings that day. I'd be shocked if we saw him pitch five innings on Sunday. I know people were surprised last week when he came out after, you know,
Well, you nailed
it right away
on Twitter, and it was exactly what the Padres were thinking.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they want him going through. At this point, having him go through the order two times is sort of a, all right, we'll let him try it, but as soon as he gets into trouble, we're not gonna push our luck with that. I think they got lucky, like with the bullpen game the other day we talked about with Perdomo lasting 3 1/3. I mean, if they could get 3 1/3 out of Margavichus on Sunday and only allow, say, one run or something, I'm sure that would be a big bonus.
Well, provided also, think about it, what if Eric Lauer has another, you know, another Eric Lauer Coors Field start the day before that?
So, the bullpen usage is going to be something where, the Margavichus outing last time, I mean, Gerardo Reyes and Wick gave up five runs in an inning after Margavichus left, to where that game got out of hand. The Rockies are throwing John Gray tonight, who seems to pitch against the Padres all the time. 13 innings, four runs so far. The Padres did win the game that he pitched at Coors. Lucchesi pitched well that day, and the Padres wound up beating Wade Davis in the ninth inning, I think it was, that night for their only win against the Rockies in five tries so far this year. Friday night is one of those games. They're facing Jeff Hoffman, who sounds like Tyler Beattie the other night, who looked like he was, you know, had a great run of outs, where you're thinking this guy has an 8 ERA and he's retiring like 10 in a row. Hoffman has an 8 ERA also so far this year, and a career ERA over 6. So we'll see how that goes. Saturday, Germán Márquez, their best starter, will go. He beat the Padres at Coors already this year. I think he might have beaten him at Petco as well. And then a rookie, 22-year-old rookie named Peter Lambert, who was a second-round pick in 15, 2-0 in his two starts in the big leagues, both against the Cubs, and only allowed one run in each of them. So that'll be interesting to see him pitch on Sunday. But the Padres have not fared terribly well against the Rockies, and so another big test coming this weekend. Any moves on the horizon that you want to forecast, other than probably bullpen guys going up and down, depending on how the starters fare?
Yeah, let's say that. And I'll tell you, they got the green light here on Urias. It's when their people in El Paso say, okay, let's do it. Or, you know, Ian Kinsler stops being serviceable, I guess. You know, the more you look at Ian Kinsler, the more you go, you know, he had a bad April. And if not for that, then I don't know. I guess, you know, we've got to find someone to pick on. But he makes some pretty good plays there at second base. And since May 1st, he's been pretty decent. But, I mean, they say that Luis Urias could be any day.
Right,
so,
right.
Who knows, right?
Well, and this is the kind of place where, obviously, you're not going to win too many 2-1 games at Coors. I mean, they have those three guys, you know, Blackman, Story, and Arenado, assuming Arenado's healthy enough to play. He got hit on the forearm yesterday, I guess x-rays. Bud Black was quoted today as saying that the x-rays showed no significant damage. Now, does significant mean, what does that mean? That's one of those weird words, like, okay, does that mean he's still going to miss a week? Or, you know, like his arm didn't fall off? Or I don't know. But I would expect, you know, you'd expect him to play. Blackman, Arenado, Story have combined for 44 home runs already this year. I think the games at Coors are always interesting, is probably the best way to put it, because you just don't know what you're going to see. You don't know when a 12-10 game is going to break out. I mean, like I said, the Rockies yesterday got blown out 10-1 You just never know, more than any other place probably, you never know what you're gonna see up there. But
and
that's why you're there, Kevin, to tell us what happens. Right.
With the Padres.
Yeah.
I suppose every beat writer feels that way, and it's the beauty of baseball. But in particular, it seems this team this year, it's like, oh, well, that was different.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think probably the guys who cover the Dodgers, sort of know most games what they're going to get until and unless Joe Kelly comes out of the bullpen. And even then, they probably know what they're going to get out of that. But, yeah, this is certainly an unpredictable team, and it figures to continue that way. So that's hopefully why some people are following, and we'll see what happens over the weekend. And then you'll be back home, and we'll talk on Monday when the Brewers come in for three games.
Brew Crew.
A quick little homestand.
Yep. All right, everybody. Thank you very much.